You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
It's only when God is active in your life that you are truly blessed.
Got a special guest with us this morning. This is Firefox. Firefox. And hopefully we can get Firefox to join us on stage. And so we might need to cut through here. Maybe move this chair, actually. Sorry. Can she come up here? Come on. Come on. Is she going to do it? Come on. Maybe. Oh, there we go. You got it. Yeah, all right. Oh, don't scoot it. So, I don't know what you guys know about horses. I know tons. So you can just stop right here. I know tons of things about horses because, you know, when it comes to, like, farming and rural society, like, what comes to mind? Sean. I understand that. I realize that. But actually, I'm going to tell you a little bit about horses. But we actually have permission from the owner of this horse, Mike Yoder. We have the kids from Ignition that are here. So if you want to come up and pet the horse while I'm talking a little bit about horses, you can come up right now. You can come up the side steps carefully and come up and pet the horse. Does anyone want to come and pet the horse? Yeah, we got one. All right, you can come and pet the horse, Alexis. And if something smells, it's Chris, not the horse. Yeah, just stay up there. As a matter of fact, that's a really good point. Try go over that side. Yeah, just watch the camera there. Yeah. So one of the interesting things about horses is that if you are not aware of this, you need to break a horse in order to ride it. And that doesn't mean physically breaking it, because that's bad. They don't go well that way. But it's a process of training the horse so that you can put a saddle on it. And one of the interesting things about, or the most important things about breaking a horse, is that it takes time. It takes time because you have to spend time with the horse. You have to spend time you don't even have a bridle on it. You don't have anything on it. You just spend time with the horse, getting to know it, because even though this is a miniature pony, horses have tons of power. And they're extremely dangerous because of that. And so now that you're petting, they're extremely dangerous. See, yep. they're dangerous because they have so much power. And of course, a big horse, and if you've seen some of these work horses, they're even taller than me, which is saying something. Actually, I would say they're probably, some of them are taller than John. And the whole process of breaking a horse is getting it used to you, so that you eventually can get a not a girdle, what do you put, a bridle, and what's the other thing, a halter on it, and then eventually a saddle. And then ride the horse, and you teach it to learn your commands and all of those things. But the issue is that it takes a lot of time, because you are carrying underneath you are riding an extremely high, a great amount of power that is now contained inside of what you're controlling and the motions that you've taught it. And that's what breaking a horse is all about, so that you can do that. And of course, one of the things that I was reading, because you can read it on Wikipedia, you know, if you ever want to know how to break a horse, it's right there. But you have to make sure that you're in front of the horse and the horse can always see you. And even when you move to the back, you keep a hand on it. Because get this, and I never really thought about this, horses are considered prey animals. Horses. It's not plural. Horses are considered prey animals, so they're always concerned about how to get away quickly or to kick whatever gets in their way. And, of course, there's tons of power for that. And that's why horses... Did you lose a finger? Oh, good. Oh, yeah, John. So anyway, the whole idea of riding a horse, which obviously for generations in our community, Belleville, you know, we still have people that use horses to get around. It was to take something that is extremely powerful and get it to a point where that power is under control. And when that power is under control, it can do incredible things. But on the part of the horse, it takes essentially some humility. And so we're gonna talk about that this morning. So Chris and John, thank you guys very much. Soft applause so we don't spook the horse. And thank you, Mike, if you're ever watching this. But you can lead right down straight past Bill, past Drew, if not. She's up here to stay. All right. I asked if I could ride, and it was frowned upon. Careful, don't break an ankle. Oh, boy. Oh, there we go. Power. There we go. Okay. All right. So thank you guys very much. But I want to talk about this idea of power under control, because we're going to talk about this phrase, this beatitude, as we're going through this series called Blessed, where we're looking at the beatitudes of Jesus. And as I've said every week, and as Craig Rochelle said in the videos when I was on vacation, the word beatitude comes from a Latin word, when the Latin translation of the Bible, beati, B-E-A-T-I, which basically is just the Latin word for blessed. And we're looking at a beatitude today that you have probably heard. It's actually outside of church world. It's just misquoted or on purposely quoted. And so we're going to talk about this idea of humility. And so the point that I want you to get before we get to that beatitude is this. And that is that blessing doesn't come from power, but from obeying humbly. Because we have a culture, we have a world, and we're going to get into this a little bit later, even us, even church people, even good Jesus followers, sometimes want power, sometimes crave this idea of power. And our culture, our world is constantly pushing, you need more power, you need more control, you need more authority. And we're going to see that if we truly want to be blessed by God, it's going to require not power, but power under control. Obedience, humble obedience to what God has for us. And so, like I said, we're doing this series. It's called Blessed, because that's the beginning of every one of these Beatitudes, which were the beginning of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. And there were there's two kind of categories of the Beatitudes that we're looking at. The first one, which we did last month in July, which I was calling rewards, which basically was this leads to that. You do this, and then this will happen. That will happen. And this month, we're looking at what I'm calling the reversals. And these are that this does not equal that. And so we're looking at this today. We're looking at Matthew chapter 5, verse 5, just one verse. And again, often quoted in movies, TV, wrong way. There we go. Matthew 5, 5, Jesus is saying this in his Sermon on the Mount. He says, "Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth." And first of all, just again, I think this is too important to not have to repeat, which I need to. The word blessed is not, as we talk about in our culture, being rich, being happy, things are going well. And again, we said last week, I've said multiple times, you know, no one talks about being blessed when, you know, they just lost a pet. No one talks about being blessed when they lost their job. People are only blessed when I'm happy, things are good. And so the word blessed that Jesus uses, the Greek word here, is makarios. And the word literally means that you are blessed when God is active and present in your life. That's what blessing is. When God is at work in your life, that is where you are blessed. It has nothing to do with our circumstances or our emotions. And it's so important because if we don't, I'm still like whispering because the horse is here. It's important because we need to realize that when we talk about being blessed, we look at these passages in Matthew 5 and go like, these don't make any sense. And that's because Jesus isn't talking about being happy. He's talking about God being present and active in your life. And so that's the first word, blessed, makarios, that's the Greek. This was written in Greek. That's how the New Testament was written, the language they spoke. And the second thing it says, are the meek. And this is where, you know, we kind of miss this word. The word meek, I mean, automatically, let me just ask kids, everybody here, what does meek rhyme with that this reminds you of? What's the word? What? Weak, right, very good. What grade are you in? Are you in preschool or kindergarten? Okay, kindergarten, good, good. The word, like, when we think of meek, we think weak. And this word meek, like, oh, blessed are the, I don't want to be that. I'll just skip this one, Jesus. I don't really want to be blessed in this. I don't want to consider a weakling. I don't want to consider a loser. I mean, this is Sean Fitch growing up. Like, I was the guy that got picked on at the bus stop every day because I wasn't as big back then as I am now. And I would get picked on. I had cologne sprinkled all over me. It was Adidas cologne, I remember. They sprinkled it all over me, like the whole bottle of it one day, right as we're getting ready to get on the bus to go to school. You know, there was one time when, I mean, I got farted on. Like, that was the thing. Hey, go fart on Sean. So I got picked on a lot. And I made it through, I think. But that idea, like, I don't want to be, Jesus, you say I need to be a loser that gets picked on and have people fart on you? Like, is that what Jesus is saying? But this word meek, the Greek word is praus, P-R-A-U-S, praus. Maybe that's how you pronounce it. And the word doesn't mean weak, but it means exactly what I was just talking about with the horse. The word means power under control. And so this idea of being meek, of praus, another way we translate that, and your translation might say that, is blessed are the humble. Because humility in Jesus' eyes and meekness in Jesus' eyes is this idea of saying, I have power on some level, we'll talk about that, but I am choosing to place it under control. And no one looks at a horse and be like, oh, that horse is weak, that horse is meek. No, actually, you know, if you're not careful, that horse can kill you. It has got a lot of power, but that power is under control. And so Jesus says that God is present and active in your life when you are meek, when you are praus, when you are humble, when you have the power that we have, but we place it under control, in submission to Jesus. That's what meekness is. Meekness means, that's what that word is. And again, people kind of throw that around all the time, but the word means God is present and active in your life when you are choosing to place the power that you have under, placing it under control, submitting. And that submission is ultimately to Jesus, but also maybe submitting to other people, as we'll talk about in a little bit. But that's what meekness is. It has nothing to do with weakness. And just in case you're concerned, here are some people that are called meek in the Bible. Moses, the murderer, who led God's people out of the wilderness, who crossed the Red Sea, who spoke face to face with Pharaoh 10 times with each of the plagues, who, you know, got angry and, of course, there were some sin issues tied into this, but got angry and beat the rock. And, like, Moses, he was a leader of millions, possibly, people. And I don't think anybody was like, oh, yeah, he was a weakling. He was a loser. People farted on Moses. Like, no. And so another guy that was called meek, Paul, the Apostle Paul, was called meek. And we talked about his story in the B-Sides a couple months ago. You know, he was a guy that was like the ultimate leader of the legalists, and he persecuted the church. And you know, later he took beatings on behalf of Jesus. He was in a shipwreck. Like, he was a guy that did some incredible things and that were everything opposite of what we would consider weak, and he was called that. There was another guy that was called meek, Jesus. Like Jesus. He referred to himself as meek. He referred to himself as gentle, as praus. And so these are people that we would consider, I don't think, we're like, oh, they're weaklings, they're losers. No, they had power and authority, but they placed it under submission. And the word we use for that is humility. It's being humble. And so he goes on and says, blessed, God is active in your life if you are meek, if you are humble, for they will inherit the earth. And again, this is a reversal. He says, the meek, when you think about that, when you think about, like, oh, wait, no, the powerful are the ones that are going to be in control. And Jesus says, no, actually, when we get to the end of all this, it's going to be the humble that are going to be in control. They're going to be the ones that are going to inherit the earth. And we talked about that in specific detail during the end series last fall, about what do the end times look and who is inheriting the kingdom, inheriting the earth, who is going to be reigning over the earth. And it's not going to be the powerful. It's going to be those that humble themselves under Jesus. And so Jesus is saying that if we want true power, then we take the power we have and we humbly place it under submission, under Jesus, and in submission to Jesus. So the point is that blessing, God is present and active in your life, doesn't come from power. And, you know, sometimes we're like, yeah, oh, I got that promotion. There's nothing wrong with getting a promotion. There's nothing wrong with doing your job well. But sometimes we're like, yeah, I got that new title. Hashtag blessed. I'm pretty awesome, aren't I? Yeah, I am. You know, and Jesus is like, no, actually, that's not really blessing. Blessing is when you take that role, that power, that promotion, that title, and place it and obey, humbly obey Jesus. And we say this to our kids all the time. Like, and I've said this, we did a whole series called Less of Me about John the Baptist a couple of years ago. And you can find that at mc3church.org. And every week was about John's humility, John the Baptist and his humility. And I said, like, you know, there's a whole lot of things in this world that people can put up with or not put up with. But if you're just a humble person, you're going to go far. And I'm not saying that as like a, you know, coffee table book or something you read on the back of the toilet. If you're humble, you'll make it through things. Like, but just like you can screw up, but if you're humble, people give you a better, you know, second chance, give you a break. So just humility is something that we need to have. So I want to talk about this idea of being broken. What is it? Like a horse is broken and it's broken. And again, as I said, it doesn't mean you break it. It means it's just taking that power and bringing it under control. So what does it look like to be broken for us? There we go. First of all, as I said, it's not power. Power is not the answer. Blessing doesn't come through power. So let's just talk about a couple of quick things related to power. First of all, it's not your accomplishments. It's not accomplishments. And I think we have this idea. And again, you know, we're trained on everything is do this and get this. Do this and get this. Make your way up, whatever that is. Whether that's through school, whether that's through your job, whether that's, you know, in your family, whether that's whatever. We have this idea of accomplishment and doing more and doing better. And there's nothing wrong with those things. But if that is our source, if that is our goal, if that is the object of where we're going, then we're in trouble. Because we think, oh, I'm blessed because I've accomplished this thing. And God is very quick to let us know, and we sang about this in a couple of the songs this morning, that He is the one that does the things in us. And so there's a story in Daniel chapter 4 that I'm going to read. It's kind of long, but it's kind of a cool story. At the time, Daniel is in the land of Babylon, and Nebuchadnezzar is the king. And the Babylonians at this time were like the empire. They ruled everything. They were the top. And the top of this ruling empire of the entire known world was King Nebuchadnezzar. And so there was a story at the beginning of Daniel chapter 4, and you can read the whole thing. I'm just kind of reading an excerpt. It's a really wild story because Nebuchadnezzar has this dream, and he's like, nobody can interpret it. And Daniel says, God actually, I can do this through God's power. And so he tells him the dream and says what's going to happen. In verse 28, it says, but all these things, so in this dream, which I'm not going to tell you what they were because we're going to read it in a second, but all these things did happen to King Nebuchadnezzar. So here's what happened. 12 months later, after Daniel interpreted this dream, he was taking a walk on the flat roof of the royal palace in Babylon. As he looked out across the city, he said, this is the king, King Nebuchadnezzar, saying, look at this great city of Babylon. It was huge. It was big. It was a big deal. He says, by my own mighty power, I have built this beautiful city as my royal residence to display my majestic splendor. So this king, who had it all, is up there saying, look at what I've done. Look how amazing I am. Look at how wonderful I am. But God sort of felt differently. He says, but while these words were still in his mouth, a voice called down from heaven, O King Nebuchadnezzar, this message is for you. Just in case he wasn't sure. Are you talking to the other guy over there? It's for you. You are no longer ruler of this kingdom. You will be driven from human society. You will live in the fields with wild animals, and you will eat grass like a cow. He said, seven periods of time will pass while you will live this way until you learn. Now let's just stop there. God says, okay, something's about to happen here, king. You're in charge of the biggest empire on the planet. And you're the one in charge of that in the best city on the planet. And I'm not just taking you out of this role, but I'm taking the kingdom away from you. And I'm not just taking the kingdom away from you. I'm taking people away from you. And you're going to end up out in the middle of nowhere, in the wild fields like a wild animal. You're losing it all. You're going from the top to the bottom. And he said seven periods of time, which could be weeks, and we'll talk about that some other day. But the time is going to pass while you live this way until you learn this, that the Most High rules over the kingdoms of the world and gives them to anyone he chooses. And I'll just say this. I heard an incredible sermon by Andy Stanley about this one passage, this verse right there, that it's a warning for us. Do we acknowledge that? That the Most High rules over the kingdoms of this world and he gives them to anyone he chooses. And so what that means is that if you don't get the promotion, but your coworker does, do you believe that God is in control enough to trust that God knows what he's doing? Or you get the promotion and you're like, yeah, of course I did, because I'm the best. Well, at the same time, you don't believe there that God is in control. So he says, Nebuchadnezzar, until you're willing to recognize that it's not about your accomplishment, it's about what I'm doing, you're going to go crazy. And so that same hour, the judgment was fulfilled, that same hour. And Nebuchadnezzar was driven away from human society. He ate grass like a cow, like he was out in a field eating grass, and he was drenched with the dew of heaven. Listen to this, just in case you're like, oh, so yeah, so maybe he had like a veggie burger. No, he was going crazy. He was out in the fields eating like a cow. It says he lived this way until his hair was as long as eagle's feathers. So a little bit longer than mine. And until his nails were like bird's claws. So Nebuchadnezzar, top of the top of the top, because he said, no, this is about me. God said, let me just show you how it's not. How it's not about your accomplishment. He was driven away and lived like a crazy man out in the fields, eating grass. And then it goes on and says, after this time had passed, I, Nebuchadnezzar, now he's speaking. I, Nebuchadnezzar, looked up to heaven. My sanity returned. And I, listen to what he did. I praised and worshiped the Most High and honored the one who lives forever. See, Nebuchadnezzar had a wake-up call there. This isn't about you and your accomplishments. This is about God. And so it was at that moment that he finally admitted, yes, God, you are the one. It's about your power, and I'm here to humbly submit to you. He goes on and says, his rule is everlasting and his kingdom is eternal. This is a Babylonian king that worshipped like idols, that is now like probably one of the best psalms in the Bible, because a psalm is a song of worship. His rule is everlasting, his kingdom is eternal. All the people of earth are nothing compared to him. He does as he pleases among the angels of heaven and among the people of the earth. No one can stop him or say to him, what do you mean by doing these things? God, why did they get that thing that I didn't? Why did their test come back okay and mine is not a good test result? When my sanity returned to me, so did my honor and glory and kingdom. My advisors and nobles sought me out and I was restored as head of my kingdom with greater honor than before. So he made his way back to the top. But listen, now at the top, in this position of power, he says, now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and glorify and honor the King of heaven, because all his acts are just and true, and he is able to humble the proud. So if we're in a spot where we're like, yeah, look what I did. Look at my accomplishments. Look how amazing I am. Just be ready, because God can go, actually, no, let me show you how you didn't do this. Let me show you how amazing you aren't. Let me show you how amazing I am. And so we need to be careful that we don't get caught up in our accomplishments. We like to take credit for what we've accomplished, but we need to realize that God is the one that does everything, which is why we sang some of the songs this morning. That's what worship is, saying, God, thank you for this. Thank you for this moment. Thank you for this grace. That's why Jesus says we can say we are blessed when we're going through a hard time. We can say we are blessed when we are being humble, because God is at work in our life. The second thing is that it's not about our attention. And dude, we like attention. We like to have titles. We like to have prominence. We want people to look at us like, yeah, did you see that? See that guy? We want people to see how great we are. And come on. Like, social media is all about drawing attention to yourself and telling everyone how perfect and amazing you are. And I actually thought about it. I should have said this earlier in the series, but like, what if we did a whole, you know, hashtag blessed campaign on social media about all the times we screw up instead of all the good things? And I don't mean someone else screwed up and so you make fun of them. I'm saying you screw up. But this idea of attention, we love, people love to get attention. And we need to realize that it's not about us. It's about God. In Acts chapter 12, there's this story of Herod. Herod Agrippa, he's one of the multiple Herods. We talked about that during the trial series back in March, April. He was one of the Herods. And this is in Acts 12. He says, about that same time, King Herod Agrippa began to persecute some believers in the church. He was the one in charge of Israel. He had the apostle James, John's brother, killed with a sword. When Herod saw how much this pleased the Jewish people, he also arrested Peter. So here's a guy who's like, oh, you like that? Watch this one. Think that was cool? Watch me do this. And love that people were like, yeah, Herod, you're kind of cool. We love you. You're so awesome. And then there's the whole story of Peter and the miraculous escape from prison in there. But then jumping down to verse 23, it continues this way. It says, now Herod was very angry. This is a different time. Now had very angry with the people of Tyre and Sidon. So they sent a delegation to make peace with him because their cities were dependent upon Herod's country for food. So they were a different outside of the nation of Israel, but they were counting on Israel for food. And Herod was upset with them. So we're like, we're going to send people because we need to make peace with Herod. We don't want him to be angry because we want to eat, right? How many of you like to eat? Okay, you know, so he wanted to do that. The delegates won the support of Blastus, which is an awesome name. Nobody ever names their kid that. My name is Matthew. My name is Hezekiah. My name is Mordecai. Like, Blastus. That just sounds so cool. Anyway, so if you have a child, feel free to name him Blastus. I'm assuming Blastus is a man. Maybe it's a woman. I don't know. But the delegates won the support of Blastus, Herod's personal assistant, who had an appointment with Herod, and an appointment with Herod was granted. So they were able to meet with Herod. So when the day arrived, Herod, who loves to please people, and he's like, okay, you thought that was good? Watch me do this. This time, he puts on his royal robes, sat on his throne, and made a speech to them. Just to know how important he was. Just so they could show him all the attention. Because he did not have to put on his royal robes. They were the fancy, fancy things. And he didn't have to sit on his throne, but he did it just to let them know, I'm King Herod, and you're not. And then he gave a speech to them, and the people gave him a great ovation, shouting, it's the voice of a god, not of a man. So they're like, Herod, you're God. You're so awesome, Herod. Herod's like, yes, I am. Like, you know, none of this, but me. Yep, me. And it said, instantly, an angel of the Lord struck Herod with a sickness. That instant. Why? Well, they were terror. They were just applauding. What's wrong with that? I mean, people applaud. Good things happen. People say, wow, I like your hair today, you know. They don't say that to me. But you know, those things happen. So what in the world? Like, wow, man, don't compliment me. I don't want to die. But the issue wasn't that they complimented him. It was because he accepted the people's worship instead of giving the glory to God. So, great Bible story, he was consumed with worms and died. Yes! So be careful when you're gardening. You never know. They might just consume you. No, they won't. But the whole point was that Herod liked the attention of people. He liked the applause of people. And this is one of those things I think church people can get caught up in. It's easy to sometimes like how, hey, you guys did a great job leading worship. That was an awesome sermon, Sean. Yeah, it kind of was. And it's easy to take that attention. And we just need to be careful because it's not about that attention. It's not about that power. It's about saying, no, this isn't about me. And I'm not talking about being fake humble. I'm talking about being real humble. Like, what we have here is because of God. We're coming up on our 10th anniversary in October, and you're going to be hearing more and more and more about it. October 17th, do not miss that Sunday. But, you know, it's easy to be like, yeah, look what we've accomplished in 10 years. Look what we've done. Look at the things that we have made happen, and look how much we have grown this church. And look at the way we have reached these people. And it's very slippery. Because you start throwing a lot of those we's in and those I's and those me's and suddenly it's about us and not about God's glory. Because really, what do we have to offer? We've got nothing. But look what God has done. We don't want the attention. We want Him to have the attention. The third thing, I need to keep going here. The third thing is authority. It's not about authority. And I will say, some of you right now in your jobs or in a position in school or whatever, you have authority. There is someone underneath you. And so this is definitely directed at you. But I will also say, for the rest of you that don't have a title of authority, you probably have authority that you don't realize. I will say this right now. If you're in high school, raise your hand. High school. All right. If you are under high school, raise your hand. Okay, high school people, can put your hands back up, put your other ones down. Okay, high school hands, have your... Those other hands, they're looking at you. They look to you. And maybe not your sibling. I don't look at them. But I just want to be real. They look up to you. So you have authority. You have a position, and they look up to you. Just, you know, if I want to have you raise hands on this, but if you're of a certain older age, let's say you're in your 40s and up. I have definitely come to the spot where people want my advice. I'm like, why? And they're like, because you're old. And so we have to recognize there are a whole lot of ways that we have authority. Maybe it's not a title, but we have authority because people look up to us. They want our opinion. Maybe just the fact that you're in right here connected to a church body. There are probably relatives and friends that you have that are not interested in Jesus. And maybe you're never interested in Jesus. But when that moment comes, when tragedy strikes, when an issue comes up with a difficult question, I will tell you from experience, and maybe you can say it too, they seek you out. You go to church, right? Can you help me with this? We have authority, and so we need to be careful. And so this is what Jesus says to his disciples. Jesus called his disciples together. They were fighting over who was the most important, by the way, which is awesome when you're with Jesus in the room going like, oh, I'm better than him. I'm better than him. Jesus called them all together like, dudes, shut up. You know that the rulers in this world lord it over their people, and officials flaunt their authority over those under them. He says, you know how it is. When you're the boss and people look up to you, everybody likes to take advantage of that. My brothers did a lot of things for me under compulsion. They were 4 years younger than me. They were twins. If they'd gotten together, they probably could have ganged up on me. And now they're both bigger than me. but there were a lot of things like, hey, go do that for me. Well, why? Because I'm your brother and I said so. And if you don't, I'll punch you in the stomach. Not the best way to use my authority. But there, this idea of, like, you know that. You've had a bad boss. You probably have a sibling that you probably don't like sometimes because they're mean to you. But Jesus says, you know what most people do with their authority. They flaunt it. They use their title, they use their position to get stuff for them. And Jesus says, but among you, it will be different. Because it's not about our authority. He said, whoever wants to be a leader among you must be your servant. Jesus, this doesn't make sense. No, he also said, the meek will inherit the earth. And whoever wants to be first among you must become your slave. If you want the blessing, you need to place yourself under. Not weakness, but meekness. Power under control, under authority. For even the Son of Man, and we're going to come back to this, and Kyle already prayed about this this morning. Even the Son of Man came not to serve, but to serve others, and to give his life as a ransom for many. So you want an example of humility? It's Jesus. Jesus had all the authority, which again, we're going to get to in just a second. But he gave that up. But Jesus says, we all know what it's like. We all know. And there's probably that person. And maybe there's that person in your school. Maybe there's that person in your company. Maybe there's that relative. You're like, oh, yeah. They flaunt their authority to get whatever they want. I don't even like being around them. And Jesus says, you know how that works. He says, but among you, it's going to be different. You're going to be different. You're not going to use your authority to lord it over people to get what you want. You're going to use your authority to place them above you. Jesus says, when you do that, then you are blessed. So, it's not power. It's not about our accomplishment. It's not about attention that we get. And it's not about authority. So what is it about? Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. So what does it mean to be meek? It's about humility. Oh yeah, there's the point. I have that in there. Blessing doesn't come from power, but it comes from obeying humbly. That's good. I didn't need to repeat it because it's there. So what is it about? It's about humility. There we go. It's not power, but it is humility. So the first thing, let's just quickly talk about what are four things, four examples, four ideas of humility. Again, it's not weakness, it's power under control. It's that you have, maybe you have accomplishments, maybe you have people that give you attention, maybe you have authority. And there's nothing wrong with those things unless those things become the goal or those things become about you and you have accomplished them. It's not about those things, it's about humility. It's about placing that power under control, saying, Jesus, I submit to you. Break me so that my power is under your control. What does that authority look like? First of all, it's about obeying completely. And all of these are about obedience. And you'll see this in a second. And when I say completely, what I'm saying is here, I think in our minds, probably, if you're listening online, if you're in this room, if you're watching online, you're probably thinking, well, of course I should do that. And if you walk out of here going, yes, that's exactly what I think. I totally agree with that guy. And those people that don't do that, they're bad people. Yeah. And maybe you'll even like post it on Facebook. This is what people need to be. And that's where it ends. If you feel it, but don't do it, it doesn't matter. It's about obeying completely. And in Philippians chapter 2, and I'm going to have to go quick on this verse. You've heard it a million times. It's a beautiful passage. Philippians chapter 2, Paul is writing to the church in Philippi. He says, is there any encouragement from belonging to Christ, any comfort from his love, any fellowship together in the Spirit? Are your hearts tender and compassionate? He says, look, do you love following Jesus? Don't you love it? Isn't it amazing? Isn't it amazing what God's Spirit is doing in you? Isn't it amazing how you're connected with each other? He says, then make me truly happy by agreeing wholeheartedly with each other. He says, get along with each other. Loving one another and working together with one mind and purpose. He says, if you love Jesus, if Jesus has done something for you, then it's time to get along with your brothers and sisters. It's time to obey. And he says, here's how it works. Don't be selfish. That never happens in your home. I understand that. So this is just, I don't know why Paul put that in there. But I'm sure, kids, you never have that issue. I know it doesn't come up at our house when I'm often the last one to eat lunch sometimes when it's my day off, and then the food that I want isn't there, and my response isn't like, oh, I'm glad you got what you want. Mine's like, why are you so selfish? Why can't you let me be selfish? So maybe selfishness is an issue. Maybe I deal with selfishness. He says, don't try to impress others. It's not about the attention, as we already talked about. It's not about your accomplishments. He says, be humble. There's that word. Be humble. Thinking of others is better than yourself. Don't look out only for your own interest, but take an interest in others. Now, here's where he goes. He says, but your attitude, you must have the same attitude that Christ Jesus had. So our attitude, our thinking about this should be as Jesus. And so what was his attitude? Well, thanks for asking, Paul says. This is what it looked like. Though he was God, he did not think of equality with God as something to cling to. Meaning, he didn't stay tied to his power and his authority. Instead, he gave up his divine privileges and took, there's the word again, the humble position of a slave and was born as a human being. Prayed that this morning. When he appeared in human form, he was brought down from God to humanity, and then from humanity, he humbled himself to a slave, and then from a slave position, he humbled himself in obedience to God and died a criminal's death on a cross. So what is the attitude we're supposed to have? The same attitude as Jesus. But it wasn't just an attitude, it was an action. He had this mindset, and therefore this is how he acted. These are the things he did. And so we need to obey completely. That if we're going to humble ourselves and we're going to be like Jesus, we need to obey completely. And then the rest of the passage just says that, therefore God exalted him. Which sounds like the meek. Blessed are the meek because they will inherit the earth. Jesus' humility led to God exalting him to the highest place of honor. Of his exalting his son to the highest place of honor. So obeying completely. It's not about just feeling. It's about doing. It's about attitude and actions. Humility is demonstrated in our obedience. That's how you show it. Like, just to be clear, you can't walk around and say, I'm humble. You can't tell people, hey, I just, good to meet you, I'm humble. I'm practicing humility right now. Okay, weird. Like, how's it going? Practicing humility. All right. No, that doesn't work. You have to, when you say, when someone says, oh, you were so amazing today. Thanks for your help. You respond with, you know what? God has helped me, and that's the best I can do for you. All of a sudden, now you're not going, I'm humble. You're demonstrating your humility. When you sacrifice, when you serve others, when you give up the attention and the accomplishment and the authority for others, that is humility. And it's in obedience. Humility is demonstrated in our obedience. Understand that. It's not just a feeling. It's not an emotion. It's demonstrated in our obedience. Second thing, and this is where we're getting a little bit more interesting, is that we need to obey sacrificially. If we're going to humble ourselves, if we're going to have a mindset like Jesus, if we're not going to lord our power over people, then we're going to have to sacrifice. Because it means we have the power. A horse has to sacrifice its power to be led around. And we have to sacrifice, which means we're giving up something that that is owed to us. We're giving up something that we deserve. If it's not something you don't deserve or not something you care about, it's not sacrifice. I have no problem loaning Zach's car to you. Because I don't care what you do to it. It's not mine. It's not sacrificial. But to loan my car, that's a different story. There's sacrifice involved because it's something that's mine. And we need to obey sacrificially. And listen to this passage. This is in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Paul is talking to this audience, and there was in the church in Corinth, there was some dispute over, should we do this or not do this? And some people are offended by this, and they're like, that's dumb. Stop being offended, your stupid faith. Don't say that, kids. And what this is his response. People say, he says, I have the right to do anything, you say. And he says, like, I get it. There are rights that we have. There are rights that the church in Corinth have. They're your right. It is your right. There is nothing wrong with that right because it's a right. Didn't mean that to be stupid. It's your right. He says, but not everything is beneficial. Just because it's your right, just because you deserve it, it doesn't mean it's a good thing to do. It doesn't mean it's always helpful, which I just said that. He says, I have the right to do anything, but not everything is constructive. See, Paul's acknowledging that we have rights, and you and I have rights, and as Americans, we have rights, and as humans, we have rights, and there's rights and rights and rights, but he says, just because you have the right doesn't mean you need to use it. It doesn't mean that your rights are actually going to be helpful. It doesn't mean your right is going to be something that's good for someone else. He says, no one should seek their own good, but the good of others. For example, say you're parked in the parking lot and somebody hits your car. You have the right to sue them for everything, probably. You didn't do anything, it's your right. But maybe you think, you know what? Maybe there's an opportunity for me to demonstrate humility and to show Jesus to this person. And maybe God uses that humility and that sacrifice of your rights to draw them to Jesus. He goes on and says, you know, there's this issue, and you can just stay there. But the issue was that there were some people that were offended by the food that they were eating. And he's like, you know, you have the right to eat anything you want. But if there's people that are offended by it, what if you help them grow closer to Jesus instead of just offending them right away with your food? And at the very end, in verse 31, he says, for everything that you do, whether you eat or drink, in everything you do, do it all to God's glory. And so if we're going to demonstrate humility, we need to realize that there are some things that we have the right to do. They're the rights that we have. And sometimes we're going to sacrifice those rights for something better, for something that's going to give glory to God. And I don't know what that looks like. Maybe that is something at work that you deserve. Maybe that's something that you deserve as a human or as an American. Or maybe it's something in your family or some rules. But maybe you give that up because you realize that giving up that thing is beneficial for something greater. So obedience is going to require sacrifice? Are you willing to sacrifice your rights for the sake of bringing someone else to Jesus? If that's what it took, would you be willing to do that? But we love to say, I deserve. This is mine. I think Paul said, don't be selfish. Oh, sorry. Dang it, I keep doing that. He'll remember that, though. When I was little, I had this moment. Anyway. And then the third thing, and this is the reality of this. This is where we break it down into normal, everyday life, is obey daily. That if we're going to practice humility, if we're going to put ourselves under God, if we're going to putting power under control, we're going to obey daily. There we go. And this is in Luke chapter 9. And this is a passage actually multiple times throughout the Gospels. You will hear Jesus say, well, he said to the crowd, if anyone wants to be my follower, if you want to be my follower, like if you want to follow Jesus, you must give up your own way. Take up your cross daily and follow me. And Jesus talks about this taking up your cross. And to us, we're like, what does that mean? How does that work? I have one hanging around my neck. Is that good? Is God cool with me now? It was a symbol, because if someone was carrying a cross in that culture, they were about to be crucified. They were about to be executed. They were about to be killed. And so when you saw someone carrying your cross, you know, a phrase we would use today would be dead man walking. Like, you knew that person was dead to themselves. They were about to be dead. They're walking to the hill where they're going to be nailed to the cross and be executed. And he says, if you're going to follow me, you need to put yourself to death. You need to get rid of yourself. Take up your cross and follow me. And Jesus says it multiple times, but here in Luke, he says, take up your cross daily. And I love that Jesus recognizes, you know what? This isn't like a once and done thing. This is work. This is a process. This is every morning waking up saying, you know what? Today it's not going to be about me. It's going to be about God. It's going to be about others. It's going to be about intentionally placing myself under other people and demonstrating meekness, demonstrating humility. He says, if you try to hang on to your life, you will lose it. But if you give up your life for my sake, you will save it. And so it's a daily process. So if you're like, man, I tried this humility thing once and it didn't work. Tomorrow, try it again. And the next day, take up your cross again. And the next day, take up your cross. Because eventually, it's going to become an attitude and a habit. And it's not going to be about us anymore. It's going to be about Jesus. And when it becomes not about us and it's about humility and meekness, suddenly we are blessed. Because we see that God is active in our life. And we see things that we never realized before. Because it was all about us before. And we don't even need God. But when we take up our cross daily, then we become Makarios. Then we are blessed because God is active and present in our life. So it's not about power, it's about humility. And the point was, blessing doesn't come from power. It doesn't come from control, it doesn't come from authority, but it comes from obeying humbly. And that's why Jesus said, blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much for your word, and I thank you personally, God, I thank you for this series and just how I'm growing and learning and being challenged in what blessing looks like and what it truly means to be blessed and how these things are some kind of simple, actually, but not easy. And I pray that you would help all of us to demonstrate humility, to be meek, to place ourselves under control. It doesn't mean we're weak. It doesn't mean we're losers. It doesn't mean we have no power. We're just choosing, just like Jesus chose, to take that power and place it under control, place it under your authority. And God, I pray that as we do that, we will see you active in our life. We will see you present. Maybe by giving up our rights, we will see someone else come to Jesus because we didn't do what we could have done. Maybe by not talking about our accomplishments and not lording our authority over someone, someone will notice that and be drawn to Jesus because of it. Maybe by being an example of not just having an attitude of humility, but actually being humble, someone will take notice and want to learn more about you. So help us to do that, God. This is not easy. That's why you tell us to do it daily. And so I pray that you would help us to daily take up our cross to follow you. Not seeking our own good, not seeking our own way, but seeking your way. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.